Hey, y'all. Pretend we're football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Bazer. I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston, as always. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel, which you guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. We're going over what people don't want to talk about, what people don't want to hear about, which is Texas basketball. They lost.
It's same as every week.
You're right.
Other than last time.
Last week was great. And then they took all that momentum and shat the bed. So we're going to go ahead and talk about what just went wrong in the Oklahoma State game, where we and where Crystal Conte might stand on Shaka Smart as of now, and how does Texas make March Madness? Is beating Texas Tech going to be enough in the Big 12 tournament, or are there going to have to be some more things that happen for Texas to make it deeper into March? So, y'all, let me go ahead and bury the lead here. What went wrong against Oklahoma State? What went wrong? It was us three and also a lot of other fans. I think Texas really was used to playing with absolutely zero expectation and nobody in the arena. So they kind of got nervous when there was a lot of people there. Johnny, you know, the first game Johnny's gone to in I don't know how long, the first game I've gone to in a little bit, and then Tim, you saying that this is a game they should have won, that this is a game that they need to take care of business in.
No, that they would take care of business.
Oh, that they would take care of business in. Yeah, I think all of that combined just put the nail in the coffin for the Longhorns in that game.
Yeah, we all doomed them for various reasons.
Right.
Me for being in attendance at all. Tim for dismissing an opponent yet again who shouldn't deserve to be dismissed so easily.
Don't make me
so
saying...
I'm going to say like 70-30 Tim. Like 70-30 Tim.
KenPom says we should have won too. Are you going to quit that thing?
KenPom's rate win probability was not... Should probably dismiss them rather easily.
I never said that. I never said we should dismiss them.
Yeah, you said we should take care of them pretty easily. It's
just... Tim said, mark it down. This is a win, and if they lose, then I will take all the blame. That was...
How drunk was I last time? Good grief.
You were pretty damn drunk. Like, you also tweeted at Chris Brown... who will be a guest on our show later today.
Chris Brown? What am I, Rihanna? What's going on here? What am I?
Kind of Chip Brown.
I would rather see him. I'd rather see him tweet at Chris Brown, honestly. I just want to see how that would play out.
Come beat up on this. You know?
quick side note. I have been going to the Texas basketball games for about 20 years now.
Oh, no wonder they've sucked for so long.
No, really. But I think I've been on the Jumbotron maybe once, and that was when I was a child. And I ran down onto the court. Like, not into the court, but like down, you know, where they have the children. They're all dancing and whatnot. Yeah, that's when I was on. And it really wasn't focused on me. Johnny Brashear gets to the game. And Johnny, how many goddamn times were you on the big board? Were you on the Jumbotron?
I think at least three.
The first time Johnny sat
next to me, as soon as Johnny sat next to me, we got on the Jumbotron. Now, of course, they were focused on some kids in front of us, but we were there. It's never happened to me before. Never.
Yeah.
Never so, has the camera ever traveled that far up.
So the first two times, I am going to... blame DJ Mel, who is yet again the best thing at Texas basketball games. He's a Hall of Famer. You should go check him out at any of his residencies around town. I definitely did not get paid to say that. He is...
You're holding out on us, Johnny. You're holding out.
Yeah, I'm going to need a cut of that, by the way.
Look, payola is scarce. It's DJ money. They don't make a lot. that split three ways does not do much for anybody. I went down to say hi to him because, again, he is one of the nicest humans on the planet, and it's always good to see him. He said, hey, what section are you going to be in? I was like, over in section 40. He's like, yeah, I'll go tell the guys to put the Jumbotron on you. I was like, okay, whatever, man. And so
it was easy to find you, too, because you were the only person in a yellow shirt. Once I realized that you were the guy in the yellow shirt,
I was
playing it at various times of the game. When I really didn't want to watch the basketball team, where in the world is Johnny Brashear?
Yeah, except it was the exact opposite of Waldo, because I was not blending.
Where's Johnny?
At all.
Yeah.
Joe Cook sent me a text message. He's like, "I just met Johnny. Nice guy. Yellow shirt."
Yeah, it was actually sort of UCLA colors because I had a blue T-shirt on underneath it. So, because it was kind of a goldish yellow? Maybe.
Well, I don't know. It was kind of yellowish, and I realized you told me you were in section 40. I looked over there. Is he the angry guy in the yellow shirt? And I was like, yeah, I think that's him. I'm pretty sure that's him. I don't see anybody else as angry as that guy. Yeah, that's him.
Is he the guy tweeting? Yes, that's him. Yes, that was me. One of the guys who shows up in the Barking Carnival comments, Mark, was very kind to give me his tickets when he was not going to be able to make the game. And so I got his seats, which were nice seats, and thank you.
This is Mark in Austin, is that right? The guy who comments?
Yeah, Mark in Austin.
There's Bob in Houston and Mark in Austin.
Yeah, well, Bob in Houston
Dallas?
Was actually
Johnny
the guy.
Dallas?
So Bob in Houston was the guy I was talking to when the Jumbotron hit me the first time. And the thing was, because DJ Mel is playing, the band is playing at the same time, because apparently they have some sort of sound clash, you know, like battle going on every time one of them plays, the others to start playing. So it's loud enough that Bob is talking to me, and I've got my head down because I'm trying to concentrate and hear what Bob is saying. So apparently the Jumbotron was on me for like a solid 2 to 3 minutes before I looked up and saw it. Because I was sitting there and I look up and I was like, oh, there I am. Yeah. And it goes away. And then it comes back and I just duck under the seats. And one of the guys who was like two rows in front of me was like, yeah, we kind of felt like we should tell you because you were on there for like 3 minutes. And it's like, yeah. So then, yes, then there was the other time when I made Will famous. Again, just like I make him famous every week with this podcast. I made him famous on the Jumbotron.
It's not just that. It was also when you went to the Iowa State game.
Oh,
and you went
yeah,
on TV.
There's that. Yeah.
I don't know. Have you been on every game you go to? You seem to get on TV in some way or another. And I don't know if it's good for society.
It's probably not. I went to Rick Barnes's last home game against Kansas State, and I'm pretty sure I wasn't on that time. So there's that. So apparently it's just during Shaka's tenure, I guess. Maybe they're keeping an eye on me to see if they can figure out who my sources are. I don't know what the reason is, but yes, that apparently is a thing that happens.
Me. I'm your sources. Yeah.
That's true. That's true. Everything is just Will saying something to me twice. That way I can say multiple sources.
But let's get deeper into what went wrong against Oklahoma State. What were the reasons on the court? We already know what the reasons off the court were. It was the Texas fans, of course. We always that's our favorite thing to do. It's our favorite pastime is blaming Texas basketball fans. But on the court, what went wrong? And I know we can go with a million different things. We could change this question to what went right. So I'm going to limit you guys to three. Give me the three main reasons Texas lost that game.
So I guess the three things, if I had to start from, well, man. All right, there's a lot. But if I had to boil it down to three, so Texas got out-rebounded. What was it? 36 to...
To 19.
36 to 19.
Wow.
And when you think about trying to get back into a game, that ability to garner extra offensive possessions certainly is a big deal. And we just couldn't do it, which is funny because, like, against Tech, against Oklahoma, against West Virginia, we got some timely offensive rebounds that either, like, helped us to win the game or kind of helped us to seal the game. We did not get that against Oklahoma State.
Here's the amazing rebounding stat. You know who the leading rebounder was for Oklahoma State? It was their point guard, Isaac Likely.
Yeah, I dig that guy.
He had 10 defensive rebounds.
He was my pick for Big 12 Player of the Year at the beginning of the year, and I have been proven way wrong on that. But he sure showed out against us. So just
yeah, if he had not had the you know, gotten ill earlier in the season, that might he might have had more to say. But yeah, you're right. He is very good.
Okay, so rebounding for me was actually number one, as crazy as that sounds. Number two was obviously a little thing called Oklahoma State shooting 67% from the field. That's tough to beat a team that does that. So that's pretty ridiculous. I want to say we scored about 0.8 points per game, and they were above 1.2. So not a recipe for success.
0.88 for Texas and 1.21 for Oklahoma State. Yeah.
And then the last thing for me is, and I guess I'm going to go ahead and probably I already am going to contradict myself. So I said it wrong earlier. I said, oh, that rebounding was most important in the shooting. But actually, I think what the very biggest domino to fall was there was a 5-minute stretch from the 16 something minute mark to like the 12:59 minute mark in the first half where we had a really, really rough 5 minutes. And in that 5 minutes, Oklahoma State shot 8 for 9. Now we have had a number of stretches throughout the season where our 5 minutes, where we've had 5 minutes of not good or even really bad. Very rarely over those 5 minutes has the team that's playing us hit 8 of 9 shots, shot 88% from the field over those 5 minutes. And if anything else, like over the last 5-game winning streak, like our defense has been our calling card, and we've gotten enough clutch shooting or been good enough, you know, like in the big moments where offensively we've been able to take control or at least kind of put some things away. But those 5 minutes when the game went from like, we were down 4-3 to, oh my gosh, we're down 20-3 and on 9 shots, you know. So Oklahoma State scored, whatever, 16 points on 9 shots. That can't be real. So whatever it was. No, it was 27-7 at the end of those 5 minutes, right? So they scored 23 points on 9 shots. That's just a... You know, I don't want to call it a fluke. I don't want to say that Oklahoma State didn't deserve to win. I don't want to say that we didn't play poorly enough to lose. I don't want to say that Shaka, you know, shouldn't have had his team ready to play. But, like, how often can you count on that kind of 5-minute stretch equaling that kind of plus minus being that negative? Like, looking at that is just a really, really... It's just so improbable. You don't even want to like if someone had written like, okay, well, I'm going to tell you a story, and in this story, we're going to talk about basketball, and in those 5 minutes, we're going to hit 8 or 9 shots, and the game's going to be done. And so like that's stranger than fiction, right? But here we are. So I mean, sure, I'm going to get called out for being an apologist, or I'm going to be called out for not being as honest about what happened as I can be. But that was the difference. Like the rest of the game, we were -4. But for those 5 minutes, we were -20. And that almost exactly ends up being the result of the final score. So it's yeah. So if I had to like put my hierarchy, those 5 minutes, and then of course, Oklahoma State shooting 67% from the field. And then beyond that, the rebounding margin. Those are where I would put my biggest three pins inside of that poster board.
I walked into the game a little late. I was 3 minutes late. You sit down, you get comfortable. I had my peanuts, and I look up. It's 20-5 already. What just happened? What in the world? And the thing is sometimes you have those games, right? As the basketball team, you just have games where you hit everything or you're missing everything and your opponent's hitting everything. You just have those games. Texas is actually, despite their record, according to KenPom, been the 11th most lucky team in the nation. So,
well, so let's quantify what he means by luck.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously, but you're going to have some games that don't bounce your way.
Sure.
And Texas has had those games where they've hit everything, and there's going to be some games where they don't. And you have the opposite team being that team.
Yeah. And you know, the thing, I wish, I mean, luck is a catchy name for that category. I wish it was named something other than luck, because effectively what that category is deviation from expected results. That's when you go look at his sort of definition of things, it is how far a team's results are how different they are than what his algorithm suggests they should be. So one might call it an overperformance stat. So if they're very positive on that, they are way overperforming what the algorithms think they should. And conversely, if they're negative, they're underperforming. And it's not surprising that a couple of Shaka's teams recently have been in the vast underperformance statistic.
Like 340-ish. Yeah.
So one of the things, not to go all Chappelle show on it, but the three things for me were Dezagua, Dezagua, Dezagua. I know that the coaching staff preached to this team that they cannot give Dezagua a sliver of daylight because he is the one shooter on their team. You know, Waters has had good years, but this year he's just not been very good. So Dezagua is the one threat. He is the sort of Jace Febres guy who could get super hot and just smoke somebody. Although to Dezagua's credit, he does it more often than Jace Febres does. If you're going to guard him, you got to fight through screens. You got to be cognizant of him cutting because Boynton also knows that he is the biggest shooter on the team, the best shooter on the team. So he's going to run him through a ton of screens. He's going to try and get him, that sliver of daylight however he can. And whoever was defending him, whether it was Ramey or Coleman or Brock Cunningham or whoever, just flat did not do a good job at it. And whether this was a result of the team just having a down game or if it is the result of them being exhausted from this five game stretch as an 8-man team, I don't know, but they weren't fighting through the screens the way they needed to on a guy like him. And that is a huge chunk of the finals, the difference in the final score.
And there were at least three times in the first half that Ramey was like literally 12 feet away helping off.
Yep.
And then sprinted back out and Dezagua pump faked and then nailed the three as Ramey was 6 feet away from him after leaping for that. And it was kind of one of those things where like, what are we doing? We will give up a slam dunk if that means that he doesn't get a chance to hit an open three. And it happened a number of times inside that same run that we talked about earlier.
Yep. I don't have any insight into this. I'm more interested down the road. This may not be something that we find out until much later. I would be interested to find out if this team is just wiped out, given that they have down to eight guys, given that they are they're relying on guys who have not had to put in this sort of heavy minutes earlier in the season, if they're dealing with a little bit dead legs or what. That may have contributed to what's going on is that, you know, this team is finally, you know, sort of they've shot their final shot and that five game run was sort of their last gasp.
They blew their load. But
I tried my best to avoid.
There you go. I was going to break the ice there.
Yeah, I was just I tried not to say that they got done dropping loads and fell asleep, but you know, it happens. So I think and this may be sort of hindsight coloring things. It feels to me like if you had gone back and asked me how most of Texas games would have gone the day I found out the Jericho Sims news, I would have expected something like this. Like when Sims went out and we were down Febres and Liddell and Sims, and I think Heppa was dealing with something at that point. The question was not, will they make the NCAA tournament? But it was, are they going to win a game in the last five or six? Because they were, especially after the Iowa State game, it was like, which of these games do you have any confidence of them winning? And this kind of feels like what it might have been like, or what, you know, the sort of worst outcome we were potentially expecting when those guys were all out and the Iowa State game happened and it was like, well, this shit's over. So maybe, I don't know, maybe the lesson is that we should appreciate the five-game stretch even more because of just how improbable it was. But it was definitely a disappointing end to the regular season, that's for sure.
Well, that does bring you to the question of where we stand now on Shaka Smart. Because going into that game, I, myself, and a lot of Longhorn fans, and I'm sure you too, were a lot higher on Shaka Smart than you were coming out. And that has to do with the expectations, right? You expected them to win this Oklahoma State game, which would have really, really helped them get their spot in March Madness. Now that they have this loss, it's still a Q2 loss, I believe, but still does not help Longhorns' season. And really, Chris Del Conte has to be hearing about it because Texas fans, to their credit, finally showed up, and then that happened. So the only game, really, this season where you've had some sort of an expectation for this team, you shit the bed. So is he still on as solid ground as he was before dropping that very winnable game? The answer is no, but where do you, Johnny and Tim, stand on Shaka Smart? And where should people stand on Shaka Smart? Where do you think Chris Del Conte stands on Shaka Smart?
Okay, so is the question where do I feel he is, or is the question where do I feel CDC is on him?
Both.
Okay. I'm still out on him. I mean, I wrote that article for a reason, because I had seen enough data. I think what we saw over the next five games is sort of the best of what a Shaka Smart team can be. And it was enough for me to acknowledge the reality that he might be back. And he still might be back, right? Like if they work their way into an NCAA tournament game, whether it's first four or not, CDC has a story he can sell of highest finish ever in the Big 12 for Shaka, because he was tied for third. He made the NCAA tournament again. They're on the upswing, you know, probably get Greg Brown, that sort of thing. And so there's a story you can sell there that will save him $3+ million in the long run. The potential for having to replace other coaches down the road in the next 12 months, it would probably make things easier for him if he didn't have to get rid of Shaka. I am personally of the opinion that we have enough data at this point that the Oklahoma State game and whatever happens after this is probably, whatever realistically happens after this is probably not enough to sort of change my long-term view on him. But again, since I sort of sit on, I rely on the data. If the data changes enough, I'll change my view of things.
I feel like I did before this game. It's terrible optics. Terrible optics to lose Oklahoma State the way that they did. To get shit on after, you know, Shaka comes on Twitter and begs, like truly in a very beseeching way. Was just like pining for Texas fans to be at the game. So the optics are really bad. Weird games like that Oklahoma State game where like look, Oklahoma State, I want to say, was last in the Big 12 in 3-point shooting before that game. They were one of the worst shooting teams in the Big 12. Against us, they went off. It sucks that they did that. But if you came to me right now and said, see, this is who we really are defensively, we're not very good, and this game showcases that, I'm not prepared to say that. Or if you talked about how, well, see, Shaka is this bad at getting his players to play as the hunted as opposed to the hunter, Yeah, that's a tougher thing for me to argue, but it's still it's a little bit unquantifiable. I don't know. Like, where do I think that he's at with CDC? I think a lot of fans were surprised that Del Conte came out and had such tangibly positive things to say about Shaka, even when we were 14-11. So now that we're 19-12, do I suspect that he would be like, okay, well, now that was the last straw? After the five-game win streak, I still like I was okay with him before, but now that we're 5-1 in the last six games, even as bad as that last game was, well, that shit was the last straw. I guess I doubt he's gonna say that. What do I say? Same thing I said before. I'm not gonna call for his ouster. If he's not back, okay, fine. Like, that's cool. I understand it. I can't argue with someone to say, you know, if the decision is to not retain him, but I'm not ready to get rid of him. There are enough coaches throughout the 130 years or whatever it is of college basketball that have figured it out inside of the time frame that he's still getting into that I'm okay with it. And I believe today on March 10th, the same that I believed 3 months ago, if you add Greg Brown to this team, it's a special team. And while I get that maybe the point of diminishing returns potentially is there for Shaka, I still think that that could be a special team, and who knows what happens after that. If Greg Brown comes, who knows after that, and what kind of players we get in for. Because if Shaka has a chance to all of a sudden recruit to Texas with a Sweet 16 or an Elite 8 to his name here with the Longhorns, we'll see. I know that that's conjecture and silly and probably not even worth thinking about, but if it's there, who knows? So what does Tim Preston think right now? I'm not prepared to say goodbye, even though I get that perhaps the prudent choice would be to say, look, you've had your time. Good luck elsewhere. We're going to make a different decision. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess what I would say is, one, there's still zero chance this is going to be a 30-minute podcast. Two, I think there's a lot of different arguments that get intertwined in this, and there's sort of pros and cons for each of them, and depending sort of on your parameters for the argument, whether you're talking about the last six games or the last year or the last 5 years, or whether you're talking about what should happen versus the reality of what might happen, like there's a lot of different permutations where you get a lot of mixed results, right? And it's not that any one view is inherently superior here. There are reasons, except for my view. Well, yes, of course, and we'll get to that. We'll grant you the last 30 minutes for that. I think there's enough data out there to support basically any position at this point, and people can make arguments any way they're going to make them. I feel like, based not on any sort of inside information, but my own view is that CDC is looking for a reason to keep Shaka. And if they make the NCAA tournament, he's probably back for financial and various other reasons that, he will get the sort of benefit of the doubt for the next year. I also think that fan interest is going to be damn near zero next year for if he does come back, because they stayed away for the vast majority of the season, and when they finally showed up, Texas shit the bed in front of them. So they're going to be even more hesitant to come out and commit, right? So
we had a really long talk last week about letting our hearts open for a second, right?
Yep. Yep. We opened our hearts, and they cracked open our rib cage and took a giant dump in our chest. That's basically what happened.
My heart is perpetually open. I just want to say that.
I know. That's why I keep shitting in your chest cavity, because you just let me. It's like the fountain of youth, but poop. Part of me, a small part of me, wants to rip the Band-Aid off just so that we don't spend another 12 fucking months talking about whether or not Shaka should stay. Like, at a certain point, it's like, this feels like a bad marriage where it's like, you know, divorce is an option, right? It's okay to divorce. Go find some other people. It may not work out well, but it's okay. And Tim is more of the till death do us part kind of person, whereas I'm the one that's like, you know, we could go do other things. Like, it's okay kind of person.
Well, I'm going to be the one that would test the market. If I was Crystal Conte, I would maybe behind the scenes take a look at, hey, John Boeheim, how you feeling about this? Because if you get Boeheim, you're probably keeping Yaklich and you're probably keeping Hootie.
Well, Hootie's on a 2-year deal.
Going to stay.
So she's staying regardless.
If they don't keep her on, they're dumb.
So. Well, right. But I understand one of the main problems we're having is the buyouts. And you're not buying out Yaklich, and you're not buying out, obviously, Hootie.
I think Yaklich is on a 1-year deal, is he not?
But he'll stay.
He'll stay.
In theory.
as a Longhorn fan, obviously, you got to look at A&M. What's happening at other places? I feel like A&M was in a similar situation as Texas is last year, where they were just not very happy with their coach, but they were kind of on a, do we keep him, do we not? And then there was a point in their season where just like, all right, he's gone. And then they took Buzz Williams.
It helped that Buzz Williams was actively shopping himself. And for the record, if Texas could get Buzz Williams, I would pack Shaka's fucking bags for him at this point.
Well, right, obviously. But if you could get John Boeheim, I mean, I don't know if it's the same as Buzz Williams, but Buzz Williams has gone and taken that team from one of the worst in Power Five to, you know, having a all-SEC player.
Yeah, they're mediocre and on the upswing, and that's good. You know, for the first year, given what Buzz lost and had to build in the first year, he's done a good job.
Right. So you're looking at maybe, I don't know if a similar situation, but there you could definitely draw some parallels to the situation.
Yeah, there are some parallels in that A&M was definitely tired of Billy Kennedy, and he had the one run, the Stansberry-funded run that kept his job for a couple more years. But there was also definitely the issue of flagging fan interest, and you know, attendance was way down at their games, and you know, people stopped giving a shit, and they went out and found a guy, and they worked on Buzz has wanted to get back to the state of Texas for a while, and if there was ever a reason to cut bait with Shaka last year, it was because I feel reasonably confident he would have picked Texas over an A&M, but you know, that's a discussion for another day. And so it worked out really well for A&M. I think their long-term future is pretty bright with Buzz. And I hope there's somebody out there like that for Texas if they decide to move on. If they don't, I hope 365 days from now there's somebody like that for Texas, because just because Texas and Shaka go and get a extremely talented lottery pick NBA talent type does not mean they're going to do much in March, because we've seen it already.
No, we have not. We haven't. I love you. We've not seen it. You can't compare what next season's team would be around him to what we saw with Jarrett Allen or Mo Bamba.
I am hopeful that Tim is right on this. I am not going to put 1 cent into that bet at this point. I will very, very happily eat shit if Shaka is around a year from now and they go to the Elite Eight with Greg Brown. Super happy to be wrong. Almost as happy as I was to be wrong about my It's Time thing for 5 games in a row. Like that, I'm happy to eat shit about things that involve Texas being successful, right? So I hope you're right. I don't see it yet. Maybe Neil Berry works out the kinks in the offensive system and things look more cohesive on that side, because the defensive side has been good this year. But back to the sort of the original point, as much as the 5-game winning streak was positive and was fun and we enjoyed it, by all rights, they should have lost the last 2 games but for a Matt Coleman miracle shot. And at that point, we're probably not really talking about should Shaka stay or go. We're probably talking about what seed in the NIT they are, and CDC is working the phones, would be my guess. So maybe Matt Coleman gave Shaka Smart $3 million in the bank. I don't know. Maybe save CDC $3 million, however you want to look at it. And for that, maybe pay the players, give them some sort of profit sharing, you know? it's like, Matt Coleman, that was a $500,000 three-pointer you made. So I don't know. We are stuck in purgatory. It's hell. It sucks. Next question.
Well, there's definitely one more game, and it could really help Shaka Smart, or it could be very damning for Shaka Smart, and it is that Texas Tech game. And Texas Tech, honestly, they have one of the historically worst records against, I believe, teams above Q4, right? I read that somewhere, and I'm going to go ahead and claim it as fact.
It's on the internet, so.
It's on the internet, so it's fact. So, is Texas Tech, beating Texas Tech, going to be enough? Because for some brackets, they're both the first four out. Some brackets, they're Texas Tech is the last four in. Is beating them going to be enough? Would it be enough for the Longhorns? I feel like it would, yes, and because I really feel like my prediction of they need to win three games over the last three plus is really coming to fruition. If they win three of, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and a Big 12 game, then I feel like that's good for a March Madness bid. You know, depending on how things fall with mid-major conferences or lesser conferences, them losing out, like San Diego State losing to Utah State really hurts Texas. I feel like if they beat Texas Tech, it really helps them out. But is that going to be enough, do you guys think?
It's, one of the things that sucks about losing to Oklahoma State is that it cost Texas the 3 seed, which would have kept them on the Baylor side of the bracket. So, if Texas beats Texas Tech, and unlike Tim, I'm not going to say they should take care of them easily, the next match would be against Kansas in all likelihood. In Kansas City, that's going to be a home game for the Jayhawks. Good luck with that. So I think if they beat Tech, unless there is a spate of bid stealers in one bid conferences or that sort of thing, like one bid conferences become two bid conferences because of somebody else, you know, winning the title, that probably puts Texas in. I don't know if it puts Texas Tech out, although they're definitely going to be very on the bubble and kind of deservedly so, because at this point Tech has the win against Louisville and not a ton else, I don't think. So It's for Texas, it's probably the difference between being a, you know, last four in or last four buys, depending on how things roll out, and being a one seed in the NIT. It seems difficult to imagine Texas losing to Tech and still making it in. It's possible, but it just seems unlikely. So, yes, I would say they need to at least beat Tech to have an argument to get into the tournament.
Yeah, it feels like a playing game to me. So, I mean, without putting it that bluntly or thinking that anything ever ends up that neat and tidy, I think it's probably a playing game.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go as far as like Jerry Palm said, where it's like only one of the, you know, whoever loses is out, but it's whoever loses that match is probably sweating more on Selection Sunday than the other one.
So then if Shaka Smart wins that game, again, I guess this is more a question for Johnny than it is Tim. Are you positive? Are you for Shaka Smart? Or Tim, if he loses that game, are you against Shaka Smart?
I guess what I would say is if Shaka Smart and Texas make the NCAA tournament, he is probably not getting let go, because it will be hard to have CDC is going to have a hard time selling getting rid of a dude who made the NCAA tournament again. Like, it's so, you know, whatever consequences that has for you personally, ethically, morally, that's up to you. I think from a pragmatic standpoint, if Texas makes the NCAA tournament, unless they make it and then get shithoused by 25 in the first game, maybe that changes things. I don't know, but it seems like that would be enough for him to get another year.
Yeah, I guess I don't feel like me saying, hey, I won't put up any fuss if he's not retained, is some type of like huge...
Well, hold up, Tim. You just got real, real Southern for a second.
Yeah, retained.
If
he's not retained, I don't think I don't feel like that's some type of like gigantic endorsement. I don't know.
I'm a pothole.
My issue with any of this is, do I think there's a chance that Shaka could win here in a very positive way even given what I've seen and what we know about the Big 12 and how competitive it's been and all those things, I think the answer for me is yes. And it would appear that for a number of other people, including maybe at least one third, if not two thirds of the other people in this podcast, that they disagree. So,
I think this is a very winnable game for Texas. I mean, when it comes to them playing Texas Tech, the first game, they kind of shit the bed, but they were up by 15. The second game, they won by over 10 at Lubbock. So I think it's a winnable game. Do I think they'll win it? That's another story. I have faith in this team? Absolutely not.
Yeah, nor should you.
Looking back at the what's happened in the past, it seems like this is a team that they can beat.
And look, if we get the offensive output from Oklahoma State the game before, right, then when they played us, maybe things are wildly different. And sports are just like that. They're like that. In one tennis match, I can hit 25 unforced errors. In the next one, against the exact same player, I can hit 7. Right? And like that's how it goes. And now, am I a great player? Am I a terrible player? Like, I don't, yes. Right? So it's a number of different truths, no matter when you're looking at those quantifiable statistics there. So, yeah, is winner or loss going to change my outlook on Shaka Smart? No. Nope. I mean, maybe as Johnny says, if we have another 20-point loss, two in a row, do I think the chances of him being retained are much smaller? Yeah. Like I could see CDC being like, "All right, well, what am I going to do? My hand is forced." Do I still fundamentally believe that one really good player can change the outlook of a program? I think so. Perhaps I'm naive about that, or maybe I'm overselling that opportunity for whatever program it is. But I still think that that's a possibility for us, and I would like to see Shaka recruit with that opportunity. But I get that that's far less justifiable than someone who says, "Homie, we've seen 5 years of this shit. We've seen multiple first-round draft picks. Why is this different?" So yes, what I'm championing is probably kind of ridiculous, but that's what I'm willing to do. I don't mind being ridiculous because I believe in what I'm talking about.
Because I'm a Texas basketball fan, and I am ridiculous by nature.
I feel the same way about my high school team, my tennis team, my guy. Like, I'm not going to quit being positive. Like, I'm going to stay optimistic forever because I don't know how else to live.
So in his final high school basketball game, Greg Brown went 2 of 16 from 3. So I feel like he's going to come in and feel right at home.
He's
at Texas.
Lock. That's a lock if I've ever heard one right there. Boy, he
fits
right
on this. Let's
take
one game and extrapolate that to making an assessment of somebody.
That's right. I said he's trash. Yeah. The guy who I sent you like 6 videos of from one game. Yeah, no, he's really impressive, but I still got to get my jokes in, so there we are.
I feel you.
Zingers, that's what we're known for here.
Booyah!
All right, so let's go ahead and get to pretend you're getting to know us. So you guys can pretend you are getting to know us. Today's pretend you're getting to know us, for the third time in 10 seconds, is what was that one thing you did in school where you felt like a badass, but in actuality, you were being a dumbass? So, who wants to start off here?
I'll start.
Of course you will.
Oh, okay, fine. Someone else take it then.
All right, so in fourth grade, we were on the playground for gym class, right? And so there were people, we were playing kickball. There were people, it was a guy on first and I think a gal on second. And one of my good friends, his name was Jason Moore. Jason was up, and he's about to kick the ball. And I say to Jason, "Hey, man, load the bases. I'm going to kick a grand slam." And then he loaded the bases. And you know what I did, Will?
What'd you do?
I kicked a grand slam.
Hell yeah.
I kicked that red plastic rubber-ish ball really far, and I ran around the bases. And I had, I'm sure, the biggest shitting grin of like, I'm unstoppable. I'm so good. Everyone probably thinks I'm so great. And then at lunch later on, I was, you know, walking around and I heard Jason say, load the bases, I'll kick a grand slam. And everyone started laughing. I was like, wait a second. They're not impressed. They're not impressed. And like at the time, I felt very hurt. And now I look back, I'm like, I'm a fucking idiot. I'm a gigantic dumbass that I was like, you load the bases, and I'll bring everybody around with my greatness.
I mean, that's kind of cool. Like, honestly.
I mean, it is
that's
cool.
That's cool. You know, I don't feel like I'd be making fun of that. That's a pretty, that's pretty dope.
Well, maybe not, but they sure
fourth
did.
Fourth graders make fun of a lot of stuff, so I, yeah.
Well, anyways. I choose to think of myself as a dumbass because that's the easier play.
I mean, we all sit in bed at night and think about the stupid shit we've done in the past. That's kind of the general sentiment behind this question.
That's my morning shower. It's not in bed at night. It's in the shower in the morning. We're like, Jesus Louise, what did I do? Why? I'm the terrible. I'm the worst. Who's so, next?
Johnny?
Tell me your darkest secrets.
Here, you can go. Well, apparently okay, I'm clearly not good enough to go on this. So
No. I meant as in you would obviously have done something crazy.
No, go ahead. Keep going. I've clearly understand my place in this thing. So
Johnny likes this, y'all. This is sort of what gets Johnny off. So
no.
Okay.
Drop it low.
All right, so I had, there's a lot I could pick from in school, but I'll go ahead and start from ninth grade. I was really into mountaineering, hiking, rock climbing, and also sports, as I was. There was this chapel in the middle of our campus. Our campus was very outdoors, and we would play sports, and sometimes shit would get stuck on the top of the chapel. And the chapel was made of a very easily climbable rock wall.
This is St. Stephen's, like, yes?
Yeah, St. Stephen's. So, you know, the home of Jared Allen. And it's probably about like a 30-foot tall chapel. I don't know. It's a pretty damn tall chapel. So I would climb up there without any protective gear, which was stupid in the first part. But I thought I was a badass. I was like, hell yeah, look at me scaling this wall, not caring about my life, and getting our footballs down from the top of the chapel. Hell yeah. And they gave me the name Spidey Bays. And, like, Spider-Man. And I love Spider-Man, and I was totally about it. But looking back, you guys are suppressing laughs. I could totally understand. Spidey Bays was definitely not meant to be cool.
It depends on the inflection in which they said it, right? Like, it one way it's endearing, and the other it is definitely patronizing. So
it was definitely done both ways.
Okay, all right. Hey, depending on the person, like a 50-50 thing.
Yeah, but
I think like a twinkle in the eye.
No, it was less 50-50. It was more 70-30 patronizing to cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you are at a parochial school in a large town in Texas, so there's got to be pricks there.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. 100%. Lots of pricks.
Including one who could scale the side of a building.
Yeah, exactly. I hear they call them Spidey Bays. Pricky Bays. All right. Yeah, definitely was a dumbass. Definitely think about that and was like, what the fuck was I thinking? And that was me introducing myself to the school because I had just joined the school. I had just switched over.
Yeah, there's your problem. Like, right, you don't put yourself out there when you first, you got to like slide into school.
Exactly. Yeah, I definitely was a little too loud coming in.
Yeah.
And definitely hurt the rest of the 4 years. But Johnny, you got something for me?
Yeah, so.
So Tuesday.
yeah. No, I was out of school. I was not in that school. But So when I was a senior in high school, I was generally a fuck up, if I'm going to be honest. I had gotten accepted to UT and just cruise controlled it. Not even cruise control, just like coasted to the finish line of high school is probably the best way to put it. Because I did not put in much effort at all. There was a one of the teachers we had, the economics teacher I had, was also the guy who was in control of the sign out in front of the high school. And this is prior to you kids and your LED signs and the digital displays. It was like the old Pizza Hut kind of, you put your letters up there, you know, use the suction cup to put the letters up on the sign kind of thing. I think we were like in the middle of a test or something, and me and this other guy were done. And so he said, well, look, I need you to go out there and put this sign up. And it was for Red Ribbon Week, which I don't know if they have those in Iowa.
Oh, yeah, Tim. We got them.
Okay.
I did not have that. What is that? Explain.
Okay, so and maybe this is a public school thing. For us poors, it was it was like a sort of a say no to drugs kind of thing. Yeah. Like it was just generally sort of it was a week where you're supposed to show your solidarity against doing drugs or whatever. It was something like that. It's been a long time.
It was Dare Week for a while, then it became Red Ribbon Week. Right.
You're right. So they wanted us to put up a sign that it said something. It was like a date of I don't know, like a high school dance or something that was supposed to say Red Ribbon Week below it. And so he gave this guy and I the thing to change the sign and the letters and all that. And so we go out there and we're changing the sign. And at some point,
they just gave young kids way too much power right there. Yeah, this is going bad.
Yeah. So this guy Andy and I don't know if Andy smoked weed or not. I feel like he did, but I don't remember. I definitely did at that point. And so I said, "What if we change it to Red Ribbon Weed?" And so Andy, who at the end, he's a very nice guy, but he's very mischievous as well. So you could convince him to do some shit. And so he starts laughing and we decide to grab like some of the letters from the other side of the sign so that one side of the sign, we could make the right letters to make it say Red Ribbon Weed on there. And so, for the better part of a day, our high school out in front of one of the busiest streets in town said Red Ribbon Weed on it. And apparently it was caught by the high school seniors who were coming back from teaching inner city school children or some shit. Oh, no. Like, and they're like, does that say Red Ribbon Weed? Yeah, we got in a lot of trouble for that. I felt like a badass. It was definitely a dumbass thing to do.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
It reminds me of one time at St. Stephen's, there was a group called the Green Goblins, and they're they're an environmental group, and they just kind of made their name the Green Goblin. So,
because you know, the Green Goblin was all about environmentalism.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was about. But we all know
Spidey Bays, then you're probably in direct confrontation with them.
That's true. No, you should have hated
beside
them.
The point, Green Goblin was very environmentally friendly, but that's beside the point. They always had this one thing every year. Their kind of big event was International Earth Day or whatever it was. Like the Green Day.
aren't all Earth Days technically international?
Okay, all right, whatever. Like keep Earth like whatever, you know. Like remember that we live on the Earth Day sort of thing. Okay,
fair enough.
And to recycle and shit. I don't know. I wasn't a green goblin. Fuck the Earth. So
I want to climb the Earth. Fuck this.
Yeah, I'll climb it, but fuck it otherwise. I want to climb it and fuck it, but
Oh, sheesh. Spidey face. I mean, take.
If you belay properly, it doesn't seem like it's that impossible.
But there was one sign that they made. So one year they made the grade above me made a bunch of signs that said live for the green. and they went and bought moss from like Marshall's or that, some hobby store and just put it all around it.
Possibly end terribly.
Yeah, and that lasted for all of like an hour, the beginning of the school, until the teachers caught on or like, no, not happening, and made the guys, like, took the guys out of class and like made them go take down all the signs.
Yeah.
So that was probably one of my favorite things that happened in high school, because that was pretty funny. I was like, that's clever. That's very clever.
I borrowed a buddy's moped one time and decided if I wore goggles, like ski goggles, and had a grimace on my face that I'd look really cool. But like, he had to like really, really grimace, like a very mean face. And he'd drive across town, which in my high school was like 7 minutes.
I don't think it ended up working. Actually out. Thinking more like grimace from McDonald's or whatever.
That'd be incredible.
Like, yeah.
Oh man. The hamburglers in the sidecar.
You get your big purple suit and you just get on there.
Uh-huh. I wish. Sheesh, I didn't have that kind of money.
Well, I guess, are we done? Is that it? Are we done with stories?
Sure.
Story time over?
Yeah. How far we get? What are we at? Almost.
59 minutes. So I told close. You.
You're right.
We're almost there, but we'll end it off.
We're
going to
have a 30-minute podcast.
We're going to be it's a 30-minute podcast, guys. We're really going to do it this time.
Look, I'm shocked. I go back and count my minutes. I'm not sure where I
Tim,
where
whatever
I
you say
here.
Happened, the opposite happens. Hence why it's your fault that Texas lost to Oklahoma State.
I'm just saying Johnny has but never said hook 'em, and then he says it, and then all of a sudden, boom, we lose bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's never going to be said again. That's
all right. Sure. Yeah. Guys, thank y'all for pretending we were football for the past hour. I've been your host, Will Bazer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Johnny Brashear, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BitterWhiteGuy, where apparently I say terrible things that are sometimes amusing. You can also find me on Barky Carnival. I'm also on Inside Texas as Tim Beam. It's a lot of fun over there. It's a long con. I've worked on it for 12 years. Or just been nice. I've been nice. And then pretty soon, everything's going to be F-bombs this. And just, I'm gonna just drop slurs everywhere because I've been waiting for this. So
Joe Cook won't know what hit him.
Yeah. He really won't. I'm going to take him by his collared white shirt and be like, yeah, that's right. It's been me all along.
I'm the world's greatest ventriloquist.
I'm like the Kaiser Soze of something incredibly unimportant. And so, you can also find me on Stitcher and Google Play and Spotify. And I'm going to say Moonbeam and maybe Pilates. There's something else.
In the Irwin Center once every 15 years.
Yeah. 5 years. 5 years. Yeah.
Sure. Tim, where can we find you, man?
Well, shockingly, you can also find me at InsideTexas.com at Tim Beam. I'll have to take a look at my post history. This is incredible. Looking forward to checking some of the wrecks.
If anything's before 6 a.m., it was probably me.
Otherwise, on Twitter at Inside Texas Hoop, no S, getting some followers lately. That Chip Brown
stuff.
Yeah,
you need to tell more people to eat shit.
I guess so, man.
Once a day.
That's where the
S went. S on Inside Texas Hoop, but there's S in his tweets.
I guess so. That's my niche now. Just crapping on people when drunk. I feel like I'm going to get in trouble from that, actually, so I'm not going to do that. But I probably should, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, you probably should. Yeah, you definitely should. Yeah.
And then on this podcast, right? That's Johnny's thing. Like, on this podcast, you can find me on Stitcher and Spotify, Podbean, Apple Podcasts. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Smirnish.
That's one.
And Svelte. Whistle.
Svelte.
You can find me on Burnt Orange Nation at Westcott Ebert's. So,
Tim, what do you think? What do you think about Texas baseball in comparison to Texas basketball?
And be very, very careful, because whatever you say, you might be considered a T-shirt fan.
I root for them. Is that...
Tim doesn't understand. This went over Tim's head.
Milquetoast Canadian motherfucker.
Is Wes got a big baseball fan? Is that the thing? Or
No, but somebody else on Vern Orange Nation definitely thought that Texas fan, you aren't a true Texas fan if you didn't go to the Texas basketball game over the Texas baseball game when they were at the same time.
Oh. Oh. Well, why?
I don't know, but I'm here for the Texas sports civil war. I'm just really going to sit around and enjoy, like...
I mean, you get that every year blocking during each other. Texas football season, where the entire fan base turns in on itself and eats its own children.
Yeah, but they're all Texas football fans. I like the different sports clashing with each other. It's sort of like the first Anchorman fight scene, where just handfuls of really weird niche fans from each sport show up, like Quidditch dudes show up with their brooms, and baseball guys show up with mitts and,
you and Tim,
alcohol, and
you, Tim, and Jeff Haley show up.
Yeah, Jeff's not going to show up. He's got kids. Whereas Tim,
but Tim will.
They're raised. They're good. They're old enough. So Tim's just going to show up wherever. I told him it was a Great Wolf Lodge, and there was a wristband, and so he showed up.
Yay, I'm there. Jeff Haley has younger kids than me. Is this legit?
Yeah, he's got like a one or 2 year old. 2 year old, I think. Yeah.
What a bitch.
Yeah, he waited till he got older and had a kid, because, you know, who wants to be the young dad?
If you French fry when you want a pizza, you're gonna have a bad time.
True words have never been said. But on that note, y'all, thank you for listening to Pretend We're Football. You guys can find us on any podcasting platform out there. Your favorite one under Hornscast. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.